And finally, for over 200 years, presidents were able to put us in war. This goes way back to Thomas Jefferson's day and the war on the Barbary pirates, who were pirates in the Mediterranean, way back in the late 18th century. And no technique had been developed to deal with that problem. When we ran into the Vietnam War the activities of President Johnson in respect of that war, we began to realize that a president could even continue a war that the country was against. And so I set my mind to it and came up with a law which for the first time endeavors to stem that tide. It's called the War Powers Resolution, and it was passed a few years ago over President Nixon's veto. And what it does is to make it necessary for the Congress to join if there is to be a war. The president can't do it alone. And that's what the Constitution provides. But only the Congress may declare war. This is an historic event, which is very little appreciated, but will be proven one day to be the barrier which will keep our country from getting precipitately, because of the presidential action, into some awful war. And I hope that there is no American who is benighted enough to believe that it can't happen to us. This country, since the Civil War, has never been touched by war. But I assure you, my friend, that with the weaponry which is available today, which can fly over oceans and enormous continents, our country will not be immune. I cannot begin to portray to you the awfulness of atomic war. Frankly, as a father and a husband myself, I will tell you that if for no other reason, you should return me to the Senate. Whichever of these men is elected president, whether it's Carter or Reagan, and as you all know, and I repeat it, I'm for Reagan, because I think our country simply has to have a change. But whether it's Carter or Reagan, I think all Americans would have a right to sleep better with a few cool heads and really experienced people who understand what it's all about and how to deal with it in the Senate of the United States. Finally, because of the vicissitudes of politics, and perhaps it's my fault, but I've always put the job ahead of myself, and therefore that I continue to work in Washington year after year without perhaps keeping all my political fences in the repair in which they should have been. I have been vested in a primary in my own party. And I believe that most of those people sincerely believe that I was perhaps not as conservative as they would like. But in answer to that, of course, New York is not as conservative as ultra-conservatives would like. That's our state. And I have represented our state precisely because I am a moderate. And we therefore was able to speak for all the people of the state. But the defeat in the primary has been very costly to me. It's been very costly in the fact that I now have only such political organization as I can myself muster to campaign for me and with me around the state. And it's been costly in money, because for years I have helped the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee to raise billions of dollars. And if I had been nominated on my party's ticket, I would have had $750,000 to campaign in this state. And as it is, I have not a dollar from those funds which I have myself helped to gather together. So, fortunately, I was not only on the Republican primary, but also on the Liberal Party primary. And so I appear on their ticket. And New Yorkers know very well how to split tickets. And that's what we're talking about now. The fact that I'm on one of the minor parties' tickets will not stop New Yorkers if they wish to elect me. And my message to you is, therefore, critically important for that reason. I know that we won't reach a fraction of the number of people who will listen to a television program. But I need money for television, and that's going to take a little bit of time to gather. And I wanted to resume my campaign at the earliest moment. And so I came to you today, people to people, in order to give you my intentions and to express to you why it is in your interest in the future to use the seniority and the clout and the experience which I have acquired in the interest of the people of our state. And let me say one final word. It is the tradition of the Senate that if I am reelected, notwithstanding that it would be on the liberal line, that I will then be readmitted to the Republican conference, which means that I will retain my seniority and my standing in the Senate in every way. I cannot begin to tell you how inestimably valuable it is to my state. If my opponents are reelected, either of them, they will come to the job 24 years behind me. And mind you, I'm the only United States Senator from this state who remained in office all that time to acquire the seniority and the prestige. In your interest, you gave it to me, which that produces. And so, my friends, that's the case for me. And I hope very much that you will also identify it as the case for you. I've become a household word in this state, and you don't do that with mirrors. The post is fine, but I am known to 95% of the people of this state. That's at least as good as any president, and probably better. And that's an asset which I don't think we should forego. And so, because I realize that you've got to go out and ask for it, and you've got to go out and get it, and that it doesn't come to you just because it's a good idea, I'm out here campaigning and urging you to take the bit in your teeth. As the people of our state, you have an opportunity. It can be done. This race is winnable. To support me, and we'll have a great victory celebration, you and I, on election day. And now I have a very dear friend and colleague in arms of the New York State Senate who stood with me, notwithstanding the fact that I am not the Republican nominee, and State Senator Roy Goodman, and I'd like to have him say a few words to you. And please stand by when he's through, because I never end the meeting without answering some questions. So I will answer them as soon as Senator Goodman is finished. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to share with you two compellingly important reasons in your own best interest why Senator Jack Javits must be returned to Albany this November. First of all, to the United States Senate in Washington, forgive the Freudian slip, Albany's my beat. First of all, there is no question about it that this man is the Tiffany piece of the Senate. Jack Javits has got the class to represent New York. And don't take my word for that, and don't take Jack Javits' word for that. Look, if you will, at the survey that was taken of 100 United States senators and of all of the members who work on their staffs in the Capitol in Washington. The question was, who is the hardest working senator in the United States Senate? And the answer came back overwhelmingly, Jacob K. Javits of New York. And the next question was, who is the most effective of all of the 100 senators in Washington? And again, the overwhelming response was Javits of New York. And the third question was, who's the brightest, the most perceptive of all of the senators in Washington? And again, the answer was even more overwhelming, Javits of New York. But there's an even more important reason, and let me double underline this, and let me just ask you to rivet your attention on it. The Senate is a place which works on the system of seniority, and you had better take a very close and careful look to see who it is that will be next up in the pecking order of seniority on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on the Republican side if we lose Javits of New York. My friends, I'm told by Washington watchers who know what they're talking about that the next senior member on that committee will be Jesse Helms of North Carolina. Jesse Helms, the senior Republican on the Foreign Relations Committee. My friends, do you have any notion of what that would mean to New York and to the nation? Please take a careful look at that. In Jack Javits, we have a man who has the endorsement, irrespective of party label, of President Gerry Ford and of Henry Kissinger. It is unimaginable to me in terms of the crisis which besets this nation and the world, and especially in the Middle East, to have anyone but Jack Javits in that highly sensitive and significant role. That about sums up the case. Never mind the fact that a lot of us love him because he spent a lifetime in the altruistic pursuit of public service. And never mind the fact that we feel in Jack Javits we've got the brightest man that we could possibly have representing us. This is a national question. There is support pouring in from around the entire United States for this man. This is a case in which principle must take precedence over party, and I urge you, vote for Jack Javits this November 4th. Thank you so much. Well, thank you very much, Senator Goodman. I appreciate that greatly, and thank you, Douglas Fairbanks, my dear friend, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And now for your questions. Yes.
I'm just a supporter of you.
The gentleman asks the following. He says he is a supporter of mine, and there have been allegations by my opponents that the United States has fallen from grace, I think I remember your words, in these last 24 years.
Supervisor of the town of Pawnee, but this morning, more importantly, I'm the Capital District Coordinator for citizens for Senator Javits. We thank you all for coming. We certainly appreciate the turnout here this morning. On behalf of myself, I would just like to make a couple of very brief comments as it regards my role in this campaign, starting back earlier in the month of September. Senator Javits has been someone who I have always admired. In my judgment, has had perhaps one of the most outstanding records in the United States Senate. I think in this period of time, both nationally and internationally, that the state of New York deserves the very finest representation that it can possibly get. And I feel that we've had it with Senator Javits, and I very strongly feel that we need him there to continue the kind of representation New York State has gotten. There are a number of people with us this morning who have agreed to be with us. They are here in support of the senator and his candidacy. I'd like to introduce some of them to you. There will be just a couple of them who would say a few words, but again, we appreciate the total support that's shown here this morning. First, Paul Carlin, of course, is the deputy campaign coordinator for Albany County and Upstate New York. Paul. Carl Walters, a very dear friend of mine, supervisor of the town of Yolin, right next to the town of Colleen, was here with us this morning. Tom Hobart, president of New York State United Teachers. Dean Streep, assistant to the president of New York State United Teachers. Jim Wood, assistant to the president of the New York State United Teachers. Frank Boardman, legislative director for the New York State United Transportation Unit. Frank, I see him in the back. This next gentleman I'm going to call upon to say just a few words to us, Mike Dolan, president of Nine Block Square Neighborhood Association of the City of Albany. Mike.
For the past 24 years, New York neighborhood associations and New York's neighborhoods across the state have had a man in Washington. Jake Javits has repeatedly come through for us when we needed him the most. His record is commendable. He co-sponsored legislation that brought $6 billion in revenue sharing since 1972. He's been sensitive to the needs of families in my neighborhood, and other neighborhood leaders I talk to feel the same. He was partially responsible for the fuel assistance for moderate and low-income families when people in my neighborhood association couldn't pay their heat bills last year. When people in my neighborhood association lost their job, Jake Javits went to bat for us and got an extension of unemployment insurance benefits. I can't tell you what that meant to people that live near me. He's worked on comprehensive youth employment. He was responsible for $400 federal tax exemption and savings interest. My savings feels better that way. He's worked on comprehensive community health programs. In addition, he's worked very hard on community development block grants and urban development action grants. Through these programs, he brought $3 billion to New York State last year. In addition to these programs, he's worked on model cities, urban renewal, neighborhood development grants. My neighborhood association's been intimately involved with developing projects to utilize these federal funds. One of the most critical things recently was his responsibility in meeting the crime problems that we've had in our neighborhoods. He was responsible through an amendment for the Community Anti-Crime Program. When the Pine Hills Toucher started his antics right around where I live, the neighborhoods turned to the Anti-Crime Program to help us out. We called people who know all about crime and about preventing crime to come into our homes, check our locks, and see how we were vulnerable. Wouldn't have been possible without the legislation that Jake Javits was responsible for through his amendment. In addition to those programs, the Anti-Crime Unit helps train voluntary neighborhood patrols. They've been responsible for improving our street lighting and training us in block watch programs. Jake Javits has been a critical factor in Washington in temporary employment, and has brought $1 billion and was responsible for 70,000 jobs in 1978. I could go on and on and on but I won't. Jake Javits is our friend. Jake Javits knows his way around Washington, and through that, he's been responsible for helping every person in my neighborhood association and every person in every neighborhood in this state. Jake, thank you very much, and what else can I say? Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Also with us today, Frank Wicks, Republican candidate for Congress from the 28th District. John Howley, Executive Director of the New York State Independent Student Coalition, and he's also going to say a few brief words. John?
It gives me great pleasure to endorse the re-election of Senator Javits. There are over 300,000 students in the independent sector alone. This year, we took 250,000 voter registration forms, distributed them, and instructed students how to fill them out. We also told them who their friends were and who their enemies were. We told them who supported them in Congress and the Senate. Overall, there has not been a stronger advocate for students and their families than Senator Javits. An author of the original 1965 Higher Education Act, Senator Javits continues to fight for the needs of students and their families who are hard hit by the ever-increasing cost of college education. While other candidates claim that we need to get more of our fair share, Senator Javits has consistently fought so that we do. This year, he assured passage of a bill that will mean over $50 million for New York State students. Senator Javits, acknowledged as a leader in foreign affairs, has also been a leader on domestic issues. His major legislative achievements include tax credits for hiring unemployed youth, a $400 tax exemption for savings interest, the New York City Financial Rescue Plan, and numerous other pieces of legislation that have assured New York State students and their families their fair share. New York State cannot afford to lose the seniority of Senator Javits. We cannot afford to lose such an effective advocate for our interests. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. I see Tom Hobart, President of New York State United Teachers, just come in. Assembly Jack, a Republican candidate for Assembly from the City of Albany. We also have with us Howard Bennett from the Teamsters. Dr. Paul Zuber is here from RPI. John Haight, immediate past president of the Albany Urban League. Dr. James Ross, Vice President, Commission for Independent Colleges and Universities. Ann Gottler, representing New York State Nurses for Political Action. Dr. Wendy Shepherd, Vice President for Program Development and Director of the Bard Center, Bard College. Dr. Jack Moranville, Assistant to the President of Union College. Dr. Patricia Hayes, Director of Administration and Planning at the College of St. Rose. Ms. Dorothy Reynolds, Assistant to the President, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. Dr. Robert Hayden, Assistant Vice President, Academic Affairs at Siena College. Honorable Richard J. Bartlett, Dean of the Albany Law School, sitting at the head table with us. We also have Arthur Nadell, President of the 9th Ward Republican Committee here in the City of Albany. Patricia Hammer, representing Ray Corbett of the AFL-CIO. Dan Sanders, Executive Vice President, sitting at the head table of the New York State United Teachers. Also, Ray Skuse, Legislative Director of the New York State United Teachers. We also have representatives here of the local trades, represented by Henry Landau, President and Business Manager. And a number of people. I'm sorry if I don't have all the names of everyone that's here, but I say again, we do appreciate the support. I think this gathering this morning is a clear indication of the attitudes that prevail throughout this state for Senator Javits and his candidacy. We also have with us Dr. Alexania Bardwell.
Baldwin.
Sorry. We thank you also for being with us. Jim Kane from the Disabled American Veterans is here. And now I would like to turn this over to a gentleman, as I said before, who I have admired for many, many years and take great pleasure in being a part of his campaign, Senator Javits, United States Senator. Senator?
Teachers in the state have been of unbelievable loyalty to me. I've been loyal to them in many struggles in the Congress. And politicians always have a right to complain about ingratitude. But Tom, no trade union group ever in history of politics has been more loyal to a man who fought for them than the teachers of this state. I want to thank you and Al Shanker and all your colleagues. And my old friend Dick Bartlett, now a dean, he hides the gray beard, you see, very well. Was the served in our legislature, as you know, and is now a highly honored leader of legal education. And I'm a lawyer to my fingertips, and so I'm deeply grateful for his presence. And I'd like to thank Mike Dolenz, the Block Associations, who are very important in cities. In 1975, I put together the New York City Association of Citizen Volunteers, which represents some 19,000 Block Associations, a marvelous precedent for trying to help our cities, which it became, and have grave financial problems, help them to help themselves. I might tell you that New York City could not have been saved in 75, but for the Block Association. And also I'm obliged to Mike for calling our attention to the fuel assistance bill. Now that's only a creature of mine. Provided $200 million to poor people and to aged people to get the money to purchase fuel last winter, and will again in the coming winter. And I tacked it on to the right bill, and due to the fact that I have a lot of seniority and a lot of connections in the Senate, it was possible to get it passed and to get the money out of the fund which represent the windfall profits tax on oil. That's a big fund. It'll be about $220 billion in the next 10 years. So that $200 million for New York is very well assured. And I'm very grateful to John Howley for calling attention first for his support. You know, Republicans, and I'm a Republican, always complain about the fact that they don't have enough youth in the party. But of course, the way to attract youth is with action which will bring youth into your party. He knows what he's doing very well. The fact is that our state was penalized to the extent of $50 million a year through a wrinkle in the law which denied us that benefit in order to make student loans, penalized us because we are an advanced state in higher education. Again, because I'm the senior member of the Education Subcommittee in the Senate, I was able, not only in the legislation, but in the House-Senate conference, which is the real payoff in legislation, to knock out that prohibition. And that means a neat $50 million for this state in the latest higher education bill. Now, the first point I'd like to make, therefore, is this. If elected to the Senate on what amounts to an independent ticket, which is what I'm running on because of my loss in the Republican primary, if elected to the Senate, the tradition and history of the Senate allow me to remain a Republican in the Republican conference and will give me the same seniority that I now have. And certainly the clout and connections are there because when I ran, it was very heavily at the request of all the Republicans, with only one exception, that of Senator Helms of North Carolina, who signed the joint letter to me and to Barry Goldwater asking us to run for re-election. So that's an assurance which New York deserves and needs. I credit my position very heavily with the ability to pilot through the package that saved New York City in 1975 and indeed saved New York State, because it's by now an open secret that if the city had gone bankrupt, the state might very well have gone the same way, this great empire state. Now our state needs a lot, and I brought with me, and they'll be distributed to the press, a long sheet of actions taken for this area. There is no county, no city, no village, no town in this state which in 24 years I have not interceded personally to benefit, whether it's housing or the maintenance of factories and offices to maintain jobs, or sewers, or water supply, or the arts and humanities. I have been there and I've delivered. This very morning, I'm able to report to you that in the valley at Amsterdam, New York, we just got $15 million from the Farm Home Administration for the FGI fibers, a plant which will employ around 700 or 800 people for fiberglass, for fabrics, in order to keep the plant in business and provide that employment. One of the most gratifying aspects of my work has been the ability to bring about the retention of plants in given areas which otherwise would have moved out and caused even more unemployment. This has gone for metalworking operations, every conceivable kind of business. And in the last year, we were able to raise from government agencies $65 million. Which preserved about 7,500 jobs. Now that's the real McCoy in this field. It's interesting that so many people get an idea because I'm constantly advertised in the newspapers that I'm meeting Deng Xiaoping of the People's Republic of China, or this Prime Minister, or that